increasing your floor to floor height, but as it turns out, in new construction, your overhead plenum gets reduced in height because you no longer have to make it large enough to accommodate all the ducts, the big supply ducts for an overhead system. So basically, a good rule of thumb is that the floor to floor height is about the same. Because you, if you want to have a return plenum, it can be much smaller, and then you add a 12 to 18 inch supply plenum, and the total height of the two plenums in an underfloor system is roughly the same height as an overhead plenum in an overhead system. There's ways that you can actually reduce the height too, so it all depends on your design. Okay. Now, I don't want to give all the, it being just a glorious story that everything's just wonderful, so there are some realities, and this is actually my job as a researcher and trying to get, accurate information is to let people know, to the best of my ability, what we see is actually happening. And so these are some of the realities that are showing up right now, and they're not all, great, but they're not insurmountable either. But I think one of the sessions just before lunch, the Oregon energy folks. Is Glenn here? I think Glenn was talking about that. Glenn Hansen. Anyway, they had a building that was underfloor and the energy use was higher than expected. And so this is kind of one of the examples of what's being seen is that a lot of the buildings that have gone in and people haven't fully understood how to operate them, or maybe there's some design or construction problems, have resulted in buildings that are using perhaps more energy, or maybe it's not saving as much as they thought. So this is one of these things that it's an implementation issue, and it requires more care in that. So this is hopefully what improved guidelines can allow us to satisfy. These are a couple that I'm going to spend some time on today. The underfloor plenum and its construction related to air leakage. I'm sure most of you, any of you that are familiar or have had some contact with underfloor systems have probably heard horror stories, or at least one example of a lot of leakage out of the pressurized plenum. And this has proven to be a big deal, and it's not rocket science to make it successful, but it does require people to pay attention. And we'll get to that when we talk about the commissioning later on. Plenum thermal decay, this is another very significant issue, and what I mean by thermal decay is the air as it flows through the underfloor plenum comes in contact with the slab and the raised floor above it as it passes through that plenum, and this allows heat to be transferred to that air. So basically, if you dump the air in a certain temperature off your air handler or off your shaft or your distribution ductwork, whatever you're doing, by the time it gets out a certain distance into the plenum, it's going to be warmer. So this impacts how the building operates, and again, we'll get into the more details of this a little bit later, but that's a very big deal. The personal control issue is one that, if you're familiar with these swirl diffusers, they don't always, provide that much control. It's more almost like a subjective perception. I can close my diffuser, I can open it, but unless you're sitting right over the diffuser, it's not like it's blowing air on you and cooling you off. So it's more of a perception thing. Again, perception is not a bad thing. Perception is reality in many cases. So you want people to feel like they're getting fresh air or they have control over it, but it's just that it doesn't actually change the temperature that much. It's more of a perceived benefit. These issues down here are really just related to the fact that it's still, it's a learning curve that we're in this period. Underfloor has really experienced very rapid growth. As a result, a lot of people are getting involved in putting these systems in. Not all of them are experienced, obviously, because it's growing very rapidly, so we have issues related to that. And, control and operating strategy problems and all that, that's true for any system. Even overhead systems are still, we can sit around until the cows come home talking about problems with overhead systems. So this is not new. And, it sort of goes without saying that we're trying to come up with improved guidelines and tools. That's certainly what we're trying to do at Center for the Built Environment. A couple of comments on market penetration related to underfloor. This is really a pretty significant point up here at the top. About 10 years ago when we were really starting to get into this in more detail, underfloor was really kind of a fringe practice. It was only done in owner-occupied buildings because the owner wanted to do it and was not mainstream, but it's really a comment on how much of an impact it now has is that it's pretty much one of the options. You know, you're going to put in a building and you want to do a fairly energy efficient or a LEED building or something. You know, well, one way to do that is an underfloor system. It certainly isn't the only way to do it. We're not here to say that underfloor should go in all buildings. You know, it's when it's the right application, it can be a very good one. And the fact that it's just routinely considered is pretty dramatic. A lot of buildings going in. You can see we've been tracking on North American projects, and we're getting up toward 500 here as we've been keeping track of it. We post a lot of these, at least locations and sizes and project names on our website. If you're interested in finding out projects in your area, if you were trying to get a hold of some examples to go visit or something like that. And this is a little table showing the growth as a percentage of new commercial office buildings. So it's only the commercial office building sector, but just since 99 to the period 2005, which is the last time I have really current data, we see that of all the new office construction going in, the number that is using raised floors has grown, you know, quite a bit, just from 3% in 99 up to 12% in 05. This means that, you know, 12% of all new office buildings in 2005 were using a raised floor, whether it used underfloor air or not. And of that total now, you can see that the impact of underfloor is almost half, and I think it's pretty close to those numbers now. So that would mean that roughly 6%, that's how you would translate that, of new office construction in 05 was underfloor air. That's how that table works. But the growth is very, the trend is clear. Just like to say a couple words, I've been talking about these things, but the market drivers as we see them, again, the flexibility provided by the raised floor is a big driver. The potential reduction in energy, again, this is proving to be a little bit more of a challenge, but this is still a big driver. Now, obviously, this goes without saying that USGBC and the LEED rating UFAD has been sort of connected with this, and so it probably going a little bit along for the ride on that. And then this is another one here that I like to throw out because I think, you know, it's very much the sense of the sustainability movement that there's more of an awareness of the quality of the indoor environment. And if a system is perceived as giving a better quality environment with personal control, maybe improved air quality and other issues like that we'll be talking about, not just saving energy, but really improving the quality of the environment, that's a big deal. And I think these systems have the potential to do that. A couple words here about, for those of you that don't know, there was a design guide. I wrote it back in, published it with ASHRAE back in 03. And this guide is available, but I have to tell you, it's 4 years ago this month that this thing was published, and it's already probably sections of it are out of date. I hate to tell you that. Of course, I have a big commission that I'm making on this thing, everyone that's sold, i.e. zero. But anyway, so I would tell you that if any of you are thinking about getting this book or already have it or whatever, just keep in mind that, you know, the information is accurate, but there's a lot of new information now coming out, a lot of it which I'm going to be talking about today. So don't just think that this is all there is. You know, it's really a moving technology. There's new information coming out, and you want to be aware that there are, you know, we're getting improved understanding, and that allows us to, you know, give more guidance and have better ability to put these things in. It's a pretty, you know, diverse set of topics as this sort of integrated technology it would tend to be. It touches upon a lot of these issues. So this is the set of topics. So it's pretty good background material if you're not familiar with the technology in general. Anyway, so enough about that. Okay, so now I want to move into a discussion of stratification related to the diffuser performance, a little bit about how these systems are configured, just to give you a sense of that. And we start off with looking at a lot of the typical diffusers. And again, I don't know, are we under some kind of commercial, you know, ASHRAE's always worried about not saying, you know, the companies and whatever. Are we under a non-commercial policy here, or not going to worry too much? Anyway, it doesn't, most of you may be familiar with this, but they're, you know, this is the standard swirl diffuser, probably the most common floor diffuser for most applications. There are many manufacturers of this type of diffuser. It shoots up, you know, 5 feet high or less. It's about 80 to 100 CFM, something like that. This is a VAV diffuser that is made by York JCI now, since they took over York. There are other manufacturers that make what we call a VAV diffuser. The difference between this one and this one primarily is the fact that this one has a method to vary the volume at the diffuser, whereas this diffuser is just connected to the plenum and is controlled pretty much by the pressure in the plenum. And so one of the designs is to vary the pressure in the plenum that will vary the amount of air coming out of this thing. And so those are different strategies, and we'll get into that a little bit more. Bar grills, standard bar grills that have been around for a long time, commonly used in perimeter applications because they line up architecturally or whatever, and they get a lot of air out there where you need it in your perimeter zones. The HVAC engineers have decided, well, this works pretty well for underfloor too, and so you'll see a lot of bar grills or something along these lines in perimeter zones because you need more air. It's not the only way to do it, but it is one of the ways to do it. And we'll talk about maybe some of the things that need to be improved with these for underfloor systems. Finally, this is a new diffuser that is a little bit different. It pretty much mounts in the same round ring on the floor of a swirl, but it's called a horizontal discharge swirl. I know that Price makes this, and I'm not sure if any others make it as well. The difference about this one is it doesn't shoot up like a normal swirl diffuser. It actually has more of a low horizontal discharge, and that can impact your amount of stratification in your space. And that might be desirable under certain situations. So we'll talk a little bit about that one as well. Now, here is a comparison of the two most common methods that are being used right now for pressurized plenum design. And you know, you don't always have to have a pressurized plenum design, but that has proven to be the most common way that these systems are going in right now, which means that the central air handler is delivering air under the floor at enough volume that it's pressurizing that plenum, and that's basically what drives the air out of the through the diffusers into the space. And the two basic approaches I kind of alluded to, the VAV diffusers require pretty much a constant pressure. These pressures are quite low, 0.05 inches, something thereabouts. And what the VAV diffuser allows you to do is to actually vary the amount of air at that diffuser. So this can be, you know, with a thermostat, you can control these diffusers to close down or open up, whatever, depending on what the thermostat is saying. They have a slightly different method in the perimeter, but again, usually you need some kind of fan assistance for at least the heating. And so this is one way, but a key difference here is that this requires a constant plenum pressure. Now the second basic approach uses the swirl diffusers, and the swirl diffusers, as I said, they don't control at the diffuser except on a manual occupant control. So for the automatic control for the whole space, the way that these systems are usually designed is with a variable pressure in the plenum. And so that allows you to have a VAV control even in a zone that uses swirl diffusers. So these are the pretty much the basic ways these are doing. Now, what happens though, you have to remember, if you turn down the pressure for the swirl diffusers in the interior zone because you have low loads there, you are going to be, how are you going to get enough air out to the perimeter? And that's why this system requires fan-driven perimeter heating and cooling, because you need to have a means to isolate the supply of air from the interior and perimeter. Many of these plenum zones are combined, both interior and perimeter zones, in the same open plenum. So it's important that you have that ability to have different performance. Again, there's much more information on this out there provided by manufacturers and everything. I'm just kind of touching upon this. I want to really kind of get to the point of talking more about the how these things perform and everything. But just a quick overview. Here's these VAV diffusers that York JCI makes. It has kind of an elegant valve here that opens and closes on a time modulation basis to control the amount of air. So the fraction of time that it's open or closed determines how much air comes out of that diffuser. And here is the basic configuration that this system would generally, you know, with some kind of overhead shaft coming down to your various floors of your building, And you would control the pressure at your fire smoke damper coming off the shaft into the plenum to be roughly a constant pressure in this plenum. And then this little bit here is the perimeter solution, which I'll show you a couple slides on in a second. So they have a slightly different way that they do the perimeter, which I believe is here. And the way this shows up here is that they have a fan box, which is for heating only, connected via ductwork to sets of diffusers that are both near the perimeter wall and a little bit in. So during normal cooling operation, the fan is off, and they control the opening so that the air just can flow out of these like a normal diffuser, just like a diffuser anywhere in the building. But in the heating mode, the diffusers close off to the plenum, and the inner row serves as the return, so you have two stages of reheat. You know, so the first stage is using room air via the fan to the outer one, and then you add in the heat of the reheat coil in here. So you can get, you know, room air and then add in your reheat coil. So that's a kind of a little bit more of a sophisticated perimeter solution that the York JCI solution does, because it doesn't require fan energy for the cooling operation. Now I want to switch to the other system very briefly, which uses these swirl diffusers as the primary diffuser in most of the interior zones. And again, you know, these are very common, many of these, and they have a very rapid swirling motion coming out of them in these circular fashions. You know, pretty simple. You know, by rotating the face of the diffuser, you can either close or open these two concentric baskets with slots in them to either line up the holes or not. And so this is the very rather crude occupant control that is available with these diffusers. Again, it's not like it's going to be this, you know, fantastically great personal control, but it is some kind of control, so it's sort of a compromise. I think, actually, just as a comment, I think the manufacturers can do a lot better than this, and I'm certainly looking forward to some more innovative diffusers down the line that will be easier to control and actually more effective. But that's probably another topic for another day. So typical installation of the swirl diffusers, you know, one per workstation. They're usually 3 or 4 feet away from where the person sits all the time, so the air isn't blowing right on them, but it's close enough that they can kind of access it. That's typically where you want to put them. So you do want to be careful when you're placing these things that you're not putting it right over here. Usually somewhere out toward the entrance to the workstation, particularly in these are fairly small workstations that we're looking at here. Switching to the perimeter, here's your kind of typical bar grill arrangement that might be at the floor along the perimeter. And this is another new grill that's quite interesting that's come out just probably in the last 6 months or thereabouts by Titus, if you haven't seen of this one. Architecturally, it's quite nice. It's a continuous strip right against the wall, and they are it's configured in 4-foot sections that can either be heating, cooling, or just blank to kind of keep the nice architectural, you know, continuity. And so it's kind of a you mix and match and pick the amount that you need to match the loads that you have. And they also have a little bit more engineering on the grills here that shoot the air partially upward. I don't know if you can tell, but part of these grills actually shoot the air inward. And we'll talk about that, but the value of shooting the air at an angle is that it actually reduces the height that the air blows into the room. And this is actually important for stratification, because we don't want to just blast the air up to the ceiling. We actually want to limit the amount of mixing, primarily in the occupied zone. And this is the strategy that we're going to talk about here in a minute when we get into the stratification stuff. Oh, yeah, sure. This one here? Are you talking about this one here? This one actually has, you can see it a little bit here, it has a sliding blade slotted, you know, damper arrangement that actually they've arranged it so that as it moves, you know, it gets more and more and more open and more and more and more closed. So it's actually quite sophisticated. It has a damper here and then also the engineered grills to shoot the throw at a more, you know, more well-designed approach. You know, those standard bar grills that I showed you pictures of earlier, those things, and I'll show a graph in a minute, they have like 30-foot throws. So if we're trying to limit the amount of mixing in our room to kind of head height, and we're putting a bar grill that has a 30-foot throw, you know, maybe somebody should think about that one. That's, yes. Typically, perimeter solutions of this type, because loads are much larger and change more rapidly in perimeter zones, you need to have automatic control of those large, you know, air flows into the perimeter system. The personal control would usually be associated with a single swirl diffuser that might be in the workstation, you know, say these offices here. Maybe right over out of the picture here, there'd be a swirl diffuser for that person that was sitting there, and they would have control over that, but they wouldn't control the bar grills. Usually the bar grills and things which are the major airflow to a perimeter zone, just because it's you know, somebody's not going to be standing around there making sure they opened up the diffuser when the sun came in if it was, you know, something like that. So that's usually the way it works. Did that answer your question? Okay. All right. All right, so let's go. I wanted to show you a couple of schematics then, with the same kind of thing we showed for the York system. In this case, the air is controlled at a pressure in the underfloor plenum using fire smoke dampers. But in this case, the pressure is varied in pressure. So what that means is that as the pressure goes down here, that will mean less air will come out of these swirl diffusers anywhere in the interior zone. You know, this is a very common configuration where the plenum, from where it's dumped in, usually in the core region, all the way out to the perimeter, it's one open plenum. It's very common. It's not always the case, but it's quite common. And if you turn this pressure way down to a very low pressure, this area out here is going to get starved if you don't have a fan. So in this particular application, you need to have a fan system that is connected to the bar grills that is running all the time for cooling operation. Now, there's one more bit on this. Actually, here's a picture of kind of how this is configured. This is a building that we studied under construction. You can see the fan box sitting right on the floor out near the perimeter. You duct typically from the fan box. The reason you duct is because when you're in heating operation, you want to make sure you isolate that source of heat from the plenum, and, you know, the slab and all that stuff, because typically the plenum is running in a cooling operation. Your air is cool under there, and you're only using the heating in the perimeter where and when you need it. And you don't want to be just dumping a bunch of hot air in this plenum and trying to fight all that mass and everything. So you isolate the heat from the mass of the plenum and everything. And so this is why it's ducted. And in this case, I don't know if there's any architects in the room here, but I have to have one architect joke since I'm an engineer. But here's a case where they wanted to have the workstations right up against the wall, so they didn't have room for the bar grills on the floor. So all the bar grills got put on the sill in this particular perimeter application. You know, nice architecturally and everything, but now you've already raised your throw by, you know, 30 inches before you even got started. So again, that's not probably the worst thing about it. It's just the idea that you'd like to try to reduce your throw on these diffusers. Again, we're going to get into this a little bit more here. One other detail that you might be interested in is the variable speed fan control for these fan boxes that are typically put in these applications. This is showing you the cooling, deadband, and heating loop operation. Here's airflow going up and fan speed going up here, and there's also shown here temperature. And you can see basically in cooling mode, you just ramp up your fan speed as you need more cooling, because the source of cool air is just coming out of the plenum. You know, whatever the plenum has in it, it's always cool air. Now, when you are in the deadband, this might be 74 to 70, something like that, you actually could turn the fan off because you don't need to use that fan energy. And usually what this is showing is that since there is some pressure in the plenum, there's still a little bit of air that makes it through the fan just by the pressure that exists in the plenum. So you can get away with turning the fan off in the deadband. You get a little bit of air there, and then, of course, since it's usually an open plan office, other air makes it over there as you need it. And then when you get down into the heating mode, you have to turn on your variable speed fan. Typically, these are ECM fans, and their minimum fan speed is about 15%. So you'll crank it up just on at minimum. You hold the minimum speed and then ramp up your temperature first, And after you get, you know, with your heating coil, usually a hot water coil or something, after you get the warm air, then you'll ramp up your fan speed. In California, of course, we have our Title 24 limitation of heating airflow being 30% of cooling. It's not always the same everywhere else, but that's a California limit here on this 30%. But that's kind of the strategy for the control of those variable speed fan coils. And then one last comparison, we won't get into that, but we've done research on both of these two systems. They both have different ways of going after VAV control, which we think is very important. And you know, there's a little bit of a difference. The York diffusers are larger, so they aren't really sized to have one per workstation, you know, so that might be a limitation for them. The swirls are smaller and you need more of them, but then you can get the one-to-one correspondence. You know, you have slightly different abilities to zone because the VAV control of the York system, a JCI, can actually be chopped up more with into a private office arrangement. But in open plans, the swirls are, you know, great. So they all work reasonably well. One's a constant pressure, one's variable pressure. The York JCI have a higher throw, so they tend to mix a little bit more. Some people think that's a limitation. All in all, though, we've seen pretty similar results in terms of stratification and airflow. It's not like it's a huge difference. So that's kind of the deal. All right. I want to move on into a little more of a broader discussion of the issues with underfloor that are important. That's probably the end of the specifics about systems, and we just want to talk about how these systems operate, how do we optimize their performance, what are the key things to really look for. And a key one here that I like to harp on is the stratification and its performance. I think we saw this image before with the Oregon Energy Code presentation. And so typically, under cooling operation, the air that is delivered out of the plenum, you know, if you're lucky, it might be 65 coming out of the diffuser. It could be warmer, and we'll talk about the implications for that. But the general idea is that your air in the occupied zone is comfortable and cooler, and as the loads and air rises up, it gets warmer up near the ceiling. Also, it works the same way for air quality. You have if you're running in economizer mode, which we're fortunate to be able to do that on the West Coast a lot, when you have 100% fresh air coming in, typically the air down here is going to be fresher than it is up here, because as the pollutants come off of people, carpeting, whatever, it rises up with this once-through airflow, and so this is not being completely mixed from floor to ceiling like it is with an overhead system. It's actually, you know, you don't want to mix. That's the key thing. You want to limit your mixing to the sort of the occupied zone or lower and let that stratification occur. You don't really care because you're not walking around up there on the ceiling, so you can let it warm up. Now, that's what you'd like to do in theory. Now, how to actually achieve that, it doesn't always work that way, and that's one of the challenges that we're dealing with right now. But these are some of the differences. You know, this assumption of a well-mixed condition is no longer valid. That'll come into play in some of our energy and design load calculations a little later. And also a little bit about comfort, because we're so familiar with the concept of a 4-foot thermostat being on the wall, and I just dial that in, you know, and I've got my comfort if I can meet that thermostat. If you're in a stratified environment where it's cooler at the floor than up above, If I've got, you know, 72 degrees at the 4-foot thermostat, it might be 70 degrees at the floor. And that has been a common example of you know, again, it's just learning and realizing what the differences are with these systems that people think, oh, well, I've run buildings for 25 years. I know that 72 is what everybody wants. But it actually will be a little bit cool. So one of the ideas might be that we have to raise the thermostat a little bit when the set point, when you're in a stratified environment, so that the average temperature that the people are exposed to is what you're shooting for, not the temperature at the 4-foot height. Because a single point temperature is no longer representative of the comfort conditions, because it's not the same. So that's a little bit of a different way to think about it. Now, as a review of that, you know, I like to show these images again just to remind people. Overhead air distribution, very well mixed when it's operating properly. Air is injected at a high velocity that mixes all the way down to the floor. So everybody gets the same temperature, same ventilation, air quality, everybody gets the same, even over in the corner, all this. Now, in comparison, I like to show this one about displacement ventilation. I'm sure many of you are familiar with this strategy. It's very similar to underfloor air distribution as we're defining it, but there are some differences that I'd like to just make sure you understand, because a lot of times people just use these synonymously. The difference is that displacement ventilation, in its real classic definition, is not necessarily a raised floor system at all. It was developed in Scandinavia, and it was not with a raised floor system. It was a low sidewall injection of air. Again, it's the same concept. You're delivering cool air at the floor level, and you're extracting it up at the ceiling. So it's the same once through stratified airflow situation, but the key difference is that the air is delivered at a very low velocity. So the air is, it's almost like pouring cold water onto your floor, and it just kind of slowly creeps across, you know, it comes across here, and then it comes over to a heat source right here, and there's a plume above her, so and then the air just goes right up with the plume. So that's all the sources, the heat sources are what are driving the upward motion, and the cool air just kind of stays along the floor until it gets to a plume that will cause the air to go up. So that's the classic displacement ventilation. And with that kind of airflow pattern, you get this thing called a stratification height, which basically ends up dividing the room into two flow patterns. It's very interesting how this works out. But generally speaking, and it isn't always perfect like this, but once the air rises up above this line, which you can see this in tests with smoke and everything, it doesn't ever really fall back down. And so this is one of these ideas that gives you this efficiency that once you get the heat up above, it can be exhausted on out of the room. Now, that isn't the whole story, but that's the general idea of how this stratification height works. And so you're shooting for roughly the idea that this stratification height is kind of around head height, so that the fresher, cooler air is down here and the warmer, more polluted air is up above. Now, if we look at, just to remind you the differences again, displacement ventilation diffusers tend to be large area diffusers. Sometimes they're smaller, but there's a lot of them under seats in auditoriums and theaters. But the reason they have to be larger, and here's an example of one in the corner of a school, or these columns have been, you know, kind of creative ways to use them. The reason they have to have large size diffusers is because they're putting in the air with very low velocity. Well, you need a big area diffuser to get enough air in there at a very low velocity. You're not shooting it in there. So that's the difference with diffusers that are displacement ventilation. Now, underfloor, again, this picture was shown earlier this morning. The idea here is that the diffuser, it is coming out of the floor and it has some turbulence. These diffusers are not just creeping the air out there. They're mixing the air up. So they're turbulent diffusers. They are creating mixing, but only up, you know, if you're designed it right, partway up the room. And so this is the difference between what we define as the throw height, which is kind of the limit vertical height of the diffuser with the velocity is something like 50 feet per minute, is using the classic ASHRAE definition. And there's also this thing defined as the clear zone, which refers to, for a swirl diffuser, this would be a imaginary cone geometrically above the diffuser, roughly 2 to 3 feet in diameter, that is an area that where you would have higher velocity air. And all you would be doing is not, you would recommend that people wouldn't just sit right in that clear zone, unless they wanted to, of course, they could do that. But that's just an idea that you don't put the clear zone, or in other words, the diffuser right over here where the person is sitting. And here's a little smoke visualization showing you again this idea of how displacement is just this kind of this cool layer of air creeping along the floor. And then the swirls, you know, they got pretty good mixing. This one, you know, this is probably looking like it's coming up butt head height or something like that, mixing quite rapidly. Okay, and one other thing on the diffusers. This shows you some of the information of the amount of airflow for these diffusers. This area here is the York VA diffuser, and you can see that it has a higher airflow rated of 150 CFM versus the swirls, which are somewhere around 100, sometimes 80 or 90. And so that's why it's hard to match up this one one-to-one with occupants. The throw is a little higher. This shows you some of those numbers versus the swirls. But the other one I wanted to just show you real quickly. Look at these, the data for the bar grills. You know, here are these bar grills. You know, we talk about all this, oh, we got to lower the throw so we don't mix all the air, and the perimeter zones are where the largest loads are in your whole damn building, and here you are putting a diffuser out there with a 25-foot throw. You know, it's not the best engineering solution there. So we're going to talk a little bit about what we can do there, but that is, you know, the nature of the industry at the moment. That's common practice. So I want to switch and show you some example profiles and talk a little bit about how they vary and what are the important factors. Yes.